آمنوا والذين هاجروا وجاهدوا في سبيل الله إن الذين آمنوا والذين هاجروا وجاهدوا في سبيل الله أولئك يرجون رحمة الله أولئك يرجون رحمة الله والله غفور رحيم يسألونك عن الخمر والميسر قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس وإثمهما أكبر من نفعهما ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو وكذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو كذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Surely those who believed and those who fled their home and strove hard in the way of Allah, these hope for the mercy of Allah, and Allah is forgiving, merciful. They ask you about intoxicants and games of chance. Say, in both of them there is a great sin and means of profit for men, and their sin is greater than their profit. And they ask you as to what they should spend. Say, what you can spare. Thus does Allah make clear to you the communications that you may ponder.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines. Israel's brutal air and artillery strikes kill more Palestinian women and children across Gaza, raising the genocidal war's death toll to above 43,300. The Israeli military intensifies its attacks on Lebanon, targeting the country's hospitals and medical centers in eastern and southern regions. And Iran's president blames the U.S. for fueling global conflicts, warning that Tehran will not leave any aggression against its sovereignty and security unanswered. Thanks for joining us. The Hezbollah resistance movement presses ahead with its retaliatory operations against Israel, targeting the regime's military positions deep inside the occupied territories. In one of its latest operations, the group targeted the Israeli army's Eliakim training base south of Haifa, with a squadron of drones. Hezbollah also targeted a group of Israeli forces in the Matula settlement with a guided missile, killing and injuring them. The resistance group targeted the Beit Lid military base east of the occupied city of Netanya with a barrage of missiles. The headquarters of Israel's Western Brigade Command in the Yara barracks was also targeted with a drone. The movement's air defense unit forced an Israeli Hermes 900 drone to leave Lebanon's airspace over the Iklim al-Tufa region. Hezbollah's missile barrages also hit, for the first time, the Haifa technical base, which is used to train the regime's air force technicians. Hezbollah carried out several more operations targeting Israeli soldiers in a number of settlements across the occupied territories. The Israeli regime presses ahead with its deadly raids on Lebanon, targeting the country's hospitals and medical centers. The Israeli military carried out a raid on the vicinity of a hospital in the southern town of Tebnan, causing severe damage and injuring at least 10 civilians. Another hospital in the eastern city of Baalbek, which was crowded with patients, was also struck and sustained material damage. Meanwhile, an Israeli raid on the town of Mashgara in western Bekaa killed 5 and injured 3. The southern town of Bazuria also witnessed a raid that killed at least 2 paramedics there. According to a previous statement by the WHO, at least 85 Lebanese health workers have been killed and dozens more wounded since late September. According to the Lebanese Health Ministry, over 2,900 have been killed and 13,000 others injured since the start of the Israeli aggression in October of last year. The Israeli military continues its brutal air and artillery strikes across the Gaza Strip, with a number of hospitals being the main targets of its attacks. In one of the latest strikes, at least 4 people were killed and dozens injured after Israeli warplanes bombed a house west of the Jabalia refugee camp. To the south, an Israeli air raid on a group of civilians in the Sheikh Nasser area in Khan Yunis left at least 9 people dead. 2 mothers and their 4 children were also killed by Israeli drones near Rafah. Israel's artillery fire targeted the Kamal Adwan Hospital in northern Gaza, hitting its nursery and injuring several children. Al-Auda and Indonesian hospitals were also hit by Israeli shells and drone fire. The Gaza genocide, which began last October, has so far claimed the lives of more than 43,300 Palestinians, leaving over 102,000 people injured. Earlier we talked to our Gaza correspondent Muti Abu Musaba to get more details on the recent Israeli attacks across the blockaded territory. Let's take a listen.
First and foremost, let me begin with the northern Gaza Strip, which is still smoldering as a result of the ongoing and ceaseless Israeli airstrikes and attacks targeting elsewhere in the northern part of Gaza Strip, whereas over the past couple of hours, the Israeli warplanes carried out several air raids against the residential buildings in Beit Lahia and Jabalia refugee camp, respectively, leaving scores of the Palestinian casualties. Those Palestinian people are still, I believe, missing under the rubble, whereas the Palestinian civil defense teams are still unable to reach those dead bodies. As you know, those teams were crippled after the Israeli occupation forces deliberately targeted those teams since day one of this genocidal war against the northern part of Gaza Strip. The Israeli occupation forces have been deliberately targeting those teams, preventing them from moving freely in order to do their job of extracting and pulling out those dead bodies from the rubble. And as you know, the kind of situation is beyond catastrophic for the Palestinian people there. The Palestinian dead bodies are still scattered in the streets of Beit Lahia and Jabalia refugee camp, and we are talking about hundreds of the Palestinian people are still believed missing under the rubble. According to, as you know, Mahmoud Basal, the spokesperson of the Gaza Civil Defense System in Gaza Strip, he stated that 100,000 Palestinian civilians are still believed stranded and besieged in the northern part of Gaza Strip.
Palestinians are reeling from raids by both the Israeli settlers and military forces across the occupied West Bank. Settler gangs have stormed Bire near Ramallah, setting fire to Palestinian property and vehicles. Footage released 4 Palestinian vehicles in flames after the attack by settlers. Meanwhile, the Israeli military has raided several areas across the West Bank. The troopers abducted at least 3 Palestinian youths during the incursions. They also attacked or ransacked several homes in a village in Al-Khalil Governorate. Israel has intensified violence against Palestinians since the regime began the onslaught on Gaza a year ago. Since then, the regime forces have killed nearly 770 Palestinians and abducted at least 11,500 others. Naka Hamad is a correspondent joining us from occupied Ramallah to give us more. Naka, what do you have for us?
Yes, good morning to you and to all of the viewers. Well, over here, let's start from Albire, as the main headline over here is the attack that was performed on the Palestinian citizens' buildings and cars over here in Albire, where settlers from a nearby settlement attacked Albire city, burning down 20 Palestinian cars and two residential buildings. Fortunately, no human losses were recorded, and many incidents followed the operation of the burning, of setting the flames to these properties, as when other nearby Palestinians tried to come to put out the fire, they were faced with a shooting of live ammunition against them. And when the staff of the PRCS, which is the Palestinian Red Crescent Society, ambulances tried to reach to the area where the settlers were attacking the Palestinians, they were faced with direct shooting. The first ambulance who responded to the calls of the Palestinians over there was shot at by the Israeli settlers, who were as many eyewitnesses we have talked to them, as eyewitnesses have told us, the attack was unprecedented. It is not the first time that the settlers attack Albire and the surrounding areas of Albire, but it is the first time that the settlers reach into the Palestinian neighborhoods deep inside a Palestinian neighborhood this deep. Well, settlers attack, as we have been seeing repeatedly since the last 13 months, since the beginning of the genocidal war in Gaza, the settlers attacks have increased tremendously. We are talking about more than 2,000 attacks in the last year. Those the ones that were documented, not to mention the ones that that Palestinians did not report on them, or the law and humanitarian organizations did not document due to many reasons. One of them is that everyone who tries to document these attacks, themselves get attacked by the Israeli settlers, as we are seeing repeatedly into northern valley areas and now over here into southern Al-Khalil area in Masafer Yatta and other areas near Al-Khadir, near Beit Lahem, and near occupied Al-Quds. Well, over here in returning to Albire, where the attack took place in the early hours of this morning, around 4 a.m., the settlers attacked the buildings and set them on fire, along with the cars around them.
Thank you very much for that. We do appreciate it. Naka Hamid there from occupied Ramallah. Thank you. We got Israel informs the UN that it has ended the 1967 agreement recognizing Palestinian refugee agency UNRWA. This comes after Israeli parliament, or the Knesset, banned UNRWA from operating in the occupied Palestinian territories. Israel has accused the employees of the UN agency of taking part in last year's Al-Aqsa flood operation without providing any evidence. The UN has warned against the devastating impact of the UNRWA ban on the humanitarian situation in Gaza and the occupied territories. The UN Security Council also expressed grave concern over Israel's decision, calling on the regime to abide by its international obligations. Israel, under international law, is an occupying regime and must implement mechanisms for aiding the people living in the occupied territory. The Yemeni armed forces say that they will continue to hit all Israeli-linked ships in nearby waters, regardless of any change in their ownership or flags. The forces' spokesman said many shipping companies affiliated to Israel are trying to bypass Yemen's punitive measures by selling their assets to other companies or changing their registration. Brigadier General Yahya Sari warned that all parties dealing with these companies and vessels are subject to punishment and prohibited from crossing the Yemeni Armed Forces zone of operations. He added that any change in the ownership or flags of the Israeli-linked ships won't save them from Yemen's measures. Sari added that the Yemeni army will continue its maritime blockade against Israel-affiliated vessels and keep targeting them until Israel's aggression against Lebanon and Gaza, as well as the siege of the Strip, stop. We earlier asked political commentator Jim Kavanaugh about the implications of Yemeni attacks for Israeli-bound vessels in the Red Sea and the Arabian Seas.
Continue their fight. They're going to continue to be the the only regime in the region that is actually consistently engaged in military activity to make sure that ordinary business does not go on with Israel while Israel is engaged in this genocidal campaign in Gaza, and now in the West Bank and Lebanon as well. And the Yemeni authorities are saying, we're not going to be fooled by any tricks where you change the registration, where you transfer the registration or transfer the flag of the vessel. Anything going to Israel is going to be stopped by us. And they've already put up with attacks from the United States and the 20 other countries, supposedly, in the prosperity guarding exercise. Look, they've hurt. They've diminished, let's say, radically the traffic going through the Suez Canal, which is Egypt is losing billions of dollars a year on that. They are having an effect, and congratulations to them. As I say, you know, people of other countries are doing some things, but by and large, Egypt, Jordan, these countries are collaborating with Israel and the United States in the genocide.
Say that the U.S. has requested safe passage for an American aircraft carrier through the Red Sea, a request that was rejected by the Ansarella leadership, resulting in the vessel being targeted. This comes amid a series of warnings from Yemen to neighboring countries to avoid involvement in the escalating regional conflict. Press TV's Abdullatif Al-Washali has more from Sana'a.
Nasruddin Amir, the head of the Yemeni Sabah news agency, requested to pass through the Red Sea without incident. That request was outrightly rejected, and the aircraft carrier subsequently became a target.
There is American hegemony in the region, and it is historically known that neighboring countries are subject to this hegemony, and we believe that they may join any aggression against Yemen, as they did in previous years, with American support. So far, there is nothing new in the negotiations to stop the war on Gaza and Lebanon, and the American administration lies more than it breathes, and all matters are heading towards escalation, especially with the approach of the Iranian response.
In his statement, Amir claimed that the U.S. and Israel are actively pushing for escalation, aiming to draw other countries in the Middle East into the conflict, a move he warns could ultimately place American interests in jeopardy. He also stated that Yemeni officials have sent multiple warnings to nearby countries, urging them to avoid being drawn into what he called American attempts to widen the war, and warned that participating in this war could have dire consequences.
There is no doubt that if America and Israel wage a war on Yemen, Saudi Arabia and the Emirates will be forced to engage in this war, and this will be done indirectly by supporting and financing Yemeni mercenary factions, supplying them with weapons, and spending on military operations in full because these countries fear appearing in the picture, knowing that Yemen will not hesitate to target them with ballistic and hypersonic missiles.
These remarks come after a recent series of diplomatic meetings led by U.S. Ambassador to Yemen Stephen Vagan, who has reportedly been working to coordinate with Saudi and Emirati-backed factions in Yemen. His efforts aim to ramp up tensions in Hodeidah, a city crucial for Yemen's coastal defense along the Red Sea. Observers say the latest developments are part of a larger pressure campaign by the U.S., Britain and Israel, seeking to push Ansarullah and the Yemeni military into lifting the naval blockade, as well as to halt Yemen's military support for Gaza and Lebanon. With Ansarullah rejecting U.S. requests and issuing warnings to neighboring countries, the risk of Yemen becoming a battleground grows by the day. How far this escalation will go remains uncertain, but for now, the message from Yemeni officials remains clear. This is a warning to those who would bring the war closer to Yemen's shores. Abdullatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
With just 2 days to go until Election Day in the U.S., rivals Donald Trump and Kamala Harris are making last-ditch efforts to drum up support in the swing states. Former Republican President Trump is shuttling between Pennsylvania, North Carolina, and Georgia, the three biggest prizes in the Electoral College system. Democratic Vice President Kamala Harris, meanwhile, is expected to spend the day in Michigan. Over 75 million people have cast early ballots ahead of Tuesday's climax. It has been a bitterly fought and divisive election. It is also historically close, with more states functionally tied in polls than in previous elections. There are growing fears that this year's election could suffer the same fate as the last one. The 2020 election was marred by Trump's voter fraud claims and a deadly assault on the Capitol by his supporters. Our correspondent in New York, Rachel Hamdoun, joined us earlier with more details about the two U.S. presidential candidates' election campaigns.
During his rally, Donald Trump made a statement, a shocking statement, that said that he would not mind, quote, he would not mind if someone had to shoot through the fake news in order to get to him. That caused a wave of outrage across the United States, not only among voters, but among politicians as well, due to the insinuation in his quote regarding violence against media. And with that being said, immediately his campaign spokesperson, Stephen Chung, tried to clean up the act. He tried to clarify that this was not what Donald Trump had meant, and he blamed it on the Democrats for trying to smudge his image. Now, this is not one incident, but this is an adding list on Donald Trump's violent rhetoric, not only right now, but we've seen his violent rhetoric during his 2016 term as well. Regarding Harris's stop in the battleground state of Michigan, she actually tried to tell reporters in Detroit that she still hopes for the votes of Arab Americans, telling them that she understands the, quote, suffering in Gaza, even though we do know that the administration she is currently in is responsible for sending and pumping billions of dollars in military and financial aid to the Israeli regime.
Thanks for being with us. It's bye-bye for now.
The whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrents fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for thee. I ask thee concerning the complaints of thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among thy servants, of a handmaid from among thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask thee, O he who owns all objects of need which are granted by his will and hastened to his desire, that thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that thou willest, and givest me mercy from thee. Forgiveness decreases thee not, and giving injuries thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from thee: the facility to obey thee at its beginning, and the favor of thy forgiveness at its end. O he who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
In the limelight.
Although leaders of the resistance movements across the region have achieved the highest status of martyrdom in the Zionist regime's assaults, the resistance and liberation movements can never be decimated by any aggressor. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Kayhan International wrote, "It is rightly said that leaders of revolutionary, resistance and liberation movements are mortals with a specified lifespan, and after all their heroic struggles, they may die, either natural death or achievement of martyrdom. But the grassroots organizations they lead for defense of their faith, homeland and humanitarian values can never be decimated by any aggressor. Examples gather all over the world, in Asia, in Africa, in Europe, and the Americas, where countries continue to tread the path of the persons to whom they owe freedom from the tyranny of the powerful empires that have long vanished. In our own Islamic culture, which is rich with the legacy of leaders who sacrificed their life, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, towers as the supreme symbol of resistance whose path we proudly tread." For the past millennium and four centuries, the immortal martyr of Karbala, whose blood and that of his family and friends triumphed over naked swords to cast into the dustbin of history, a despicable tyrant, has continued to inspire us to greater heights in every age and place. The victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran in 1979 and its spectacular success over the past four and a half decades in the face of the intricate terrorism of the U.S. is indebted to the movement of Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and so also the emergence of the Hezbollah in Lebanon in 1982 and its resistance in defeating the devilish plots of Zionism. The Palestinian liberation movements, Hamas and Islamic Jihad, have also embraced the legacy of the Prophet's grandson, whose teachings have molded Iraqis and Yemenis, along with Syria, into formidable members of the Axis of Resistance. This historic development has opened the door of opportunity for the people of all parts of the Arabian Peninsula, as well as of Jordan, Egypt, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Turkey, and other nations of Asia and Africa, to join ranks for the defense of Muslims and Islamic sanctities. Even the conscientious non-Muslim people in Europe, the Americas, and other parts of the world, including the Christians, the real Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, and Sikhs, have been shocked at the brutality of the crimes against humanity of the Zionist regime with the weapons and wealth of the U.S. This is the reason they are rallying in their respective countries for end of the genocide in Gaza and prevention of the intended genocide in Lebanon, as well as the sinister plot to expand the theater of war to Syria, Iraq, and Iran. The U.S. Zionist assumption is that the targeted killing of senior officials of Hamas and Hezbollah have decapitated these anti-terrorist movements, and now is the chance to inflame other parts of the region in pursuit of the satanic goal of creating Greater Israel, from the River Nile in Egypt to the River Euphrates on the Iraq-Iran border. The recently aborted Israeli aerial attack on some places in Iran and the threats of the war criminals in Tel Aviv to target with brutal force the Islamic Republic's industrial and economic installations falls in this same terroristic framework. The onus is now on Tehran to deliver the telling blow to these devilish designs in coordination with the rest of the Axis of Resistance to show that the indomitable spirit of the revolutionary movements is alive and all set for the liberation of Palestine from the banks of the River Jordan to the Mediterranean Sea. This is indeed the most deserving gift for the souls of the martyrs who were victims of the illegitimate Zionist entity, whose eventual fate is elimination from the map of West Asia region.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Thank you. visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson. This is Palestine Declassified. We're the only show that's dedicated to investigating and exposing the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. In today's show, we'll be talking to the Electronic Intifada's associate editor, Asa Wynne-Stanley, about the impact of the British government misusing anti-terrorist legislation against journalists. His home was raided by counter-terrorism police last month. In our first report, Latif Abouchakra takes up the story about what happened to Asa in the early hours of the morning on the 17th of October.
Asa Wynne-Stanley is a Welsh journalist working in London for the well-known independent media website Electronic Intifada. He is the latest casualty of the war declared by the British state on anti-Zionism. On Thursday, 17th of October, he was awoken at 5:40 a.m. by around 10 counter-terrorism police. They did not arrest him, but seized several electronic devices. Wynne-Stanley takes up the story in an interview given the next day.
20 to 6 yesterday morning, police came, counter-terror command came. There was about 10 of them, and they basically barged into the house. You know, they were ringing on the doorbell. It was quite terrifying, and they were here for about 3 hours, and they took away all of my devices that I use for my work as a journalist, and they made it very clear that they knew what my profession was, they knew who I was, and this was in regards to social media posts that I'd made. They didn't specify which ones. They didn't arrest me, thankfully.
A letter addressed to Wynne-Stanley from the Counter-Terrorism Command of the Metropolitan Police Service indicates that the authorities are aware of your profession as a journalist, but that, notwithstanding, police are investigating possible offences under Section 1 and 2 of the Terrorism Act 2006. These provisions set out the purported offence of encouragement of terrorism, but it's worth looking at the Act to see what it actually says. This section applies to direct or indirect encouragement to the commission, preparation or instigation of acts of terrorism. But Section 2 is a caveat that the person must intend others to be encouraged to commit terrorism offences or be reckless about that. But of course, neither Hamas or any of the other Palestinian resistance factions, only three of which are proscribed in the UK, operate in the UK, and nobody really imagines that Wynne-Stanley or others are calling for people to take up arms in the UK, which is what appears to be envisaged by the law. This suggests that just like the other recent cases, this is likely to be an attempt to intimidate caused by the heavy pressure being put on the police by the Zionist movement, and indeed, sections of the political class. What's clear here is that this is a further escalation. The police quoted Section 12 of the Terrorism Act against both Sarah Wilkinson and Richard Medhurst, but not the 2006 Act. And Wynne-Stanley is the first professional journalist who has had his home address raided. Wynne-Stanley's interview the morning after the police raid to the independent journalist Crispin Flintoff reflected on the timing and significance of the raid.
It just seems like nothing but a harassment and a way to stop journalists who are reporting on what is the Holocaust of our times, what is the, you know, the genocide of the Israelis in the Gaza Strip. There's like 200,000 people that have been killed so far, you know. On Monday, we saw those horrific scenes of this young man being burned alive in the Gaza Strip. You know, we all saw it. We wake up every morning to new crimes and new reports of babies being killed and men, women and children just being annihilated in the Gaza Strip and now Lebanon as well. And the British authorities, instead of doing anything against that, are still carrying on in their involvement with it.
Joining me in the studio, as usual, is our resident expert, David Miller, who's widely regarded as the UK's preeminent scholarly critic of Israel. David's a senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeim University, and he's a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch. And as I said in the introduction, our guest contributor today is Asa Wynne-Stanley, who, as well as being the associate editor with the Electronic Intifada, is also an acclaimed investigative journalist and author. He publishes a weekly Substack newsletter called Palestine Still the Issue and hosts the Electronic Intifada podcast. His book, Weaponizing Anti-Semitism, is a must-read explanation about the way the Israel lobby sabotaged Jeremy Corbyn's leadership of the British Labour Party. Welcome to the show. Asa, what's the latest with your case?
Well, the latest is my legal team is making very strong representations to the police, and essentially we are waiting to hear back about those. They have... well, I can't say too much about the detail of it, but what I can say is that we are taking very, very strong action to protect my sources. We're going all out to protect my sources. Obviously, you know, the devices that they took were, you know, they contained some, you know, documentation related to my journalism. They contained, you know, obviously my phone has contacts of people that I talk to, people that I email, and similarly my computer and whatnot. So it potentially contains information that could identify sources, could identify personal information about sources in a context of where I've reported on groups like Palestine Action, for example, and people in Palestine as well, course, you know, Palestinians themselves in Palestine. Yes. You know, it could be in we know that the British state works very closely with the Israeli security state. Yeah. So, you know, in the case of Palestinians that we work with as part of the Electronic Intifada, potentially compromising them as sources could actually endanger their lives and or their livelihoods and whatnot. Yes. As is, you know, could potentially be the case for people like Palestine Action activists in this country. Yes. Yes. So my legal team is extremely aware of the importance of this issue and are doing everything possible to stop the police from actually accessing any of my devices.
Right, OK. Well, David, just explain, will you, the sections of the Terrorism Act that the police quoted at Asa when they raided his home.
So the act that's been used against Richard Medhurst, Sarah Wilkinson, is the 2000 Terrorism Act. This is the 2006 Terrorism Act. They have to keep revising the Terrorism Act because they have to keep extending their powers because they haven't got enough powers, apparently. Section 1.2 of the 2006 Act, which is what was used against Asa for the first time, talks about encouraging terrorism. But you have to have intended to have encouraged the terrorism. So it's kind of like they're assuming that there are people in the security establishment who think that ISIS is setting up some kind of version of the Qassam Brigades. Yes. In the UK, which, of course, is plainly ridiculous. And so it's obvious that this is an attempt to harass him and to harass other journalists as part of the intimidation effect. You know, well, people think, oh, if they've come for Asa, they've come for Richard, they've come for Sarah, they might come for me next. I might not do anything, I might not say the things I've been saying, I might not report in the way I've been reporting. So it's obviously an intimidation tactic. But that's what the legislation suggests. But given what Asa's just said about the collaboration there is between the British security state and the Israeli security state, and, of course, the fact that the British have been allowing conducting intelligence operations for the Israelis, you might sort of think that this kind of act is something which could actually apply to the activities of the police themselves, because if they're actually helping to set people up for killings, these are, you know, potentially describable, indeed, even in the way in which the act is drafted, as acts of terrorism. Sure. So, you know, we're in the kind of looking glass here, aren't we? Where the very opposite of what's being said is the case.
Yes. Well, Asa, what do you make of the legal basis for this action then? I mean, obviously, you're not calling for an armed insurgency in the UK on behalf of the Palestinian resistance, are you?
No, it's ludicrous. I mean, it's... And there was no question of that when the police were here, right? There was no... It wasn't even in question. Like, they were very, very clear in the paperwork as you mentioned in the package, we're aware of your profession. And they also said actually something quite interesting, which was they're aware of the fact that I'm involved in the undercover policing inquiry, which, you know, when I was an activist in International Solidarity Movement London, nearly 20 years ago, going back now, there was an undercover spy. There was an undercover spy in that group, as there were in many groups, more than 1,000 groups going back to the 1960s. And so, you know, they claim to have that it's okay that they're still investigating me as a journalist. So it seems to me that, like David mentioned, that this is an attempt to expand their powers as they've been doing through law, and expand their powers precedent. Yes. So, you know, it's the 2000 Act and now the 2006 Act is being used, and it's being used against journalists more now. So, you know, this may hopefully they will give my devices back. We'll be able to get my devices back. This could be the end for me, but I don't think it's going to be the, in terms of, you know, the end of their harassment against me. Hopefully that's the case, but we don't know.
I don't think it's the
end of these powers.
No, absolutely. I mean, as I say, though, so the fact that they've had them and had access to them, you know, potentially could compromise, you know, your sources. It is very worrying. But David, I mean, Asa there was just alluding to, wasn't he, kind of the spy cop relations. We know that what state's been capable of over many, many years. But what we've been seeing of late, it really does represent a real escalation, doesn't it?
It's an escalation in relation to the genocide in Gaza, in relation to the question of Palestine overall. It's an escalation in comparison to, for example, the conflict in the north of Ireland, where the terrorism legislation was used against journalists, but not in the way it's now being used against journalists in this particular case. So it's absolutely an escalation. But also, let's remember, it's an escalation in the context of a new government. And this is a new government which is showing that it's even more escalatory in these matters than the Conservatives were. And the Conservative government was a government of real extremists.
Of course, yeah. Well, Asa, very briefly, because we're going to go to our next package now, but did the police take all of the devices in your house, including those of family members?
No, they didn't. They didn't take devices that didn't belong to me, but there was a kind of pressure tactic where they implied they may do that if I hadn't had cooperated with them to the limited extent that I did. One of the first things they asked me was to identify the devices in the house that may contain excluded materials that's subject to journalistic or protections or legal privileges. Of course, they were trying to portray that as something that was to protect me, but I was very, you know, mindful of identifying devices that could contain information which would then be used to identify sources, you know, if it was accessed. And so because I sought legal advice before I agreed to thing, and after getting that legal advice, I did identify which devices that I used. I mean, it was fairly obvious anyway, because they were pretty much all contained in my office. And so they didn't take family members' devices up, but I know they've done that in the cases of others.
Yeah. Well, our next report sets out the way in which the Zionist assets have penetrated key pillars of the British state.
There can't be a single individual in the British intelligence agencies who believes that Asa Winstanley is intent on starting up a British branch of Al-Qassam Brigades, the military wing of Hamas. But that is effectively what the counterterrorism police were threatening him with. So what is really going on in this case, and in the other cases which have been initiated or progressed since the new Labour government came to power? Let's remember that these cases involved other journalists such as Sarah Wilkinson and Richard Medhurst, as well as the co-founder of Palestine Action, Richard Barnard. The fact that the Zionist entity appears to be directly targeting the resistance movement in the UK is an indication that they are a genuine threat in subverting the lies and disinformation emanating from the Zionist regime. Sarah Wilkinson posts regularly on every atrocity she can. Richard Medhurst takes no prisoners in his dissection of disinformation. Asa Winstanley has been at the forefront of undermining the propaganda about beheaded babies, rape, and civilian casualties. And Richard Barnard is a leading light in the cutting edge of the anti-Zionist movement in the UK in Palestine action. Of course they are a threat. And how does the long arm of the genocidal colony reach so far? First, it operates a myriad of assets and agents which work together to push cases into the justice system. Anonymous troll groups like Ganesh or Jew and Harry's Place are used to raise issues which can then be passed on to official news. These anonymous groups are joined by a network of public counter-extremism groups. These include the Campaign Against Anti-Semitism, UK Lawyers for Israel, and the Policy Exchange think tank. Second, the British counterterrorism apparatus and intelligence services are penetrated by Zionist assumptions about risks and threats. Thirdly, the new Labour government is directly penetrated by Zionist assets. Attorney General Richard Hermer was appointed on the 5th of July, 2024. Though much play is made that he is a critic of Netanyahu, he is a Zionist. His deputy is the Solicitor General. On the 9th of July, Keir Starmer appointed a new MP, Sarah Sackman, to the role. She is a fanatical Zionist and until the election was vice chair of the Jewish Labour Movement, the Zionist infiltration group within the Labour Party. Joining these two ideological Zionists in the Attorney General's office is Director General Dog Wilson. Wilson was revealed in the Freedom of Information docs to be organizing meetings between May 2022 and February 2023 with the Israeli embassy. This was direct evidence of collusion with the genocidal regime. No wonder Asa and the others were targeted.
Well, David, do you think that the Zionists really think that Asa and others who've been targeted as a genuine threat?
Well, of course they do. They haven't. They only target people who they think are a threat. They only target those who are actually undermining their narratives and the people who have, you know, who effectively have been given an award by the Zionist entity are Asa, Sarah, and Richard, because they are the ones who are being attacked here, and they are the ones who are effectively the best investigators of the Zionist entity in this country, as attested by the Zionist entity itself. Mm-hmm. So yes, of course, they are seen as a threat, and it's an indication really of the fantastic work that all three of them have been doing, including, of course, our guest Asa. You know, this is a genuine threat to the ability of the Zionists to project the lies which they continue to endure and have done for the last 76 years, never mind the last year.
I think what a lot of viewers will find very sinister is the way in which the British state has collaborated with the Zionists with this sort of crackdown on people like Asa.
Well, of course, they have, and of course there's these peripheral Zionist groups which are involved in this, but the core of this has got to be the people at the very top of the Attorney General's office, and that's Sackman and, of course, Hermer. And this is extremely worrying. This is effectively assets or even agents of a hostile foreign power who are actually in government roles. And this is the key thing people don't understand about the Zionist movement, is the way in which it infiltrates key elements of the structure. It's quite a different thing from the question of the Israel lobby.
No, indeed. Well, Asa, I mean, would you say the reason that you've been targeted then is because you've comprehensively debunked the Zionist propaganda about what happened on October the 7th last year?
Yes, I mean, there's no doubt that I am a thorn in their side, and that's where I became a target for them. It's quite interesting as well to me how this has been one of the things that the senior officer on the night told me was that this investigation of theirs had been a year in the making. So it's interesting what the reasons were for delay, for taking so long, if this was related to social media postings that they claim I made a year ago. I don't know yet which ones they are. I haven't, you know, they wouldn't say. They wouldn't tell me, so we can't know the reasons for those yet. Hopefully, in time, that will all come out. Yeah. But there's no doubt that it relates to my work, as they said to me that we're aware of your profession.
Sure. Well, moving on then, David. I mean, just tell us then, will you, about the Zionist sort of troll groups and cutouts? I mean, What's their role in all of this?
So these organisations, which are named in the package there, the National Jew, Harry's Place, the UK Lawyers for Israel, the CAA, Policy Exchange, these are organisations that have been around for a while. National Jew is perhaps the most recent one. And in the history of these kinds of controversies, we've seen many, many examples stretching back over a decade now of these organisations providing information in public, which is then taken up by civil servants or is passed to civil servants or passed to law enforcement, the route to escalate into state action. And whether that's state action, meaning police action or other legal action, as in the case, one of the earliest cases was the case of a Palestinian politician called Raed Salah, one of the earliest times I ever met Asa, in fact, where his case was escalated through Harry's Place, for example, and into a case taken by the government under Theresa May to try and exclude him. So this is how they operate. They operate these anonymous troll groups with no accountability, and that allows the government then to take action in ways that they otherwise wouldn't.
Indeed, very sinister. Well, Asa, just say a word or two, will you, about what you make of Richard Hermer.
Yes, well, it's quite interesting, isn't it? Richard Hermer actually wrote a section of a book that I co-edited back in 2011 along with Frank Barat, Corporate Complicity in Israel's Occupation. And if you turn to page 13, you can see the section that he wrote here, and it's titled Redress for Palestinian Victims of Human Rights Abuses in the Courts of England and Wales. The book is published by Pluto Press. I believe you can still get it. Yeah. What he's writing about that, you know, he was a QC even then, obviously. So what he was writing about there was how Palestinian victims of Israeli occupation could potentially challenge legal action against Elbit Systems for operating in Britain using British courts. So how a prominent barrister has gone from that to deciding to, for example, we know now that he was involved and he signed off in the decision to charge Richard Barnard what they're trying to get him for, the trumped up charges, what they get him for in the courts. And so this is, again, relating to a speech he made just after the 7th of October, 2023. And so, again, why the delay here? There does seem to be, it seems highly likely, we don't know for sure yet, but it seems highly likely that he may have been, if not him, then certainly his office must have been involved in some way in my case. Hopefully more will come out about that in due course.
An indication, Ace, that they're losing the battle of public opinion and are clamping down on people like yourself who are, you know, getting the truth out to people. But David, I mean, we're really slightly out of time. I want to get another question into Ace if I can. But just tell us a little bit, will you, about Sarah Sackman?
So Sarah Sackman is the deputy to Hermer. So they're the two most senior people in the Attorney General's office, which also runs oversees the Crown Prosecution Service. She's a fanatical Zionist, has been for many years. One of her earliest jobs was an intern in the Israeli Supreme Court. So she's effectively a Zionist agent within government, and that's really something which we shouldn't be having at all. But this is in the office, the Attorney General's office, where the most senior official has been overseeing contacts with the Israeli embassy, and where of the 10,000 civil servants who are overseen there, Jews are something like six times more likely to be employed in the senior civil service than the head of population would suggest. And Muslims are 20% of what they should be in terms of their capacity, their population density in society. So there's a massive problem there of overrepresentation of Jews, most of whom will be, almost all of whom will be Zionists in that department.
Indeed. Well, I'm afraid that's all we've got time for today. So thank you to our guest, Asa Winstanley, and of course our resident expert, Professor David Miller. So until next time, when I hope you'll join us again on Palestine Declassified, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I am Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers, Sheikh Rouhani and
Brother Muhammad.
Brother Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Muhammad. Welcome
to the show. Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So for today's episode, we want to talk about Al-Aqsa flood or operation. Let's talk a little bit about the background first and the history. So, brother, when did it exactly start and why?
Now, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Al-Aqsa flood operation is not something new that the Palestinian resistance had began or were, the, you know, operated. You see, the Palestinians for more than 70 years, seven decades, have been under oppression, have been under intense scrutiny from the Israeli occupation there. Yes. And so therefore, as the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran rightfully said in the recent Friday prayers, that the Palestinians have every legality for any form of resistance. And this is not only the stance of Iran. China have mentioned this in many of their occasions. Mm-hmm. And in the United Nations, this has been decided and it has been concluded that the Palestinian resistance should not be seen as terrorist organizations, even though other powers are seeing them to be as such actors. Yeah. And so therefore, this act of resistance was not something new. Mm-hmm. And although it was unexpected, but it was not something new.
That's right.
The background.
And in Islam, we have always been advised to have resistance, muqawama, you know.
Exactly.
In a defensive format.
Exactly.
So it was not an aggressive attack, rather a defensive one.
Yes.
You know, first list.
So to consider this as defensive, we need to take in the context of what happened previously.
Yeah. Over a century.
Maybe. Exactly. That's what was going to happen. You see, after the re-election of Benjamin Netanyahu and the extreme right. Setanyahu, you can rather say.
Yeah.
The extreme right party in Israel, they were now taking power and they were now preparing the grounds to annex both the West Bank and Gaza with their expansionist overview.
Right.
And they were doing that practically, not necessarily mentioning in the news, not necessarily concluding it or even bringing it out in publications. But it was very well known in West Bank, which they have more power since the Palestinian Authority is a little more lenient with them.
Yes.
They were already encroaching.
Yes.
Many of the illegal settlers have made their settlements there and have encroached in the ground and so on.
Oh, right.
And this was about to happen for Gaza.
Yes.
And this was already decided. Since this was decided and it was known for those, the Palestinians in Gaza, especially Hamas, that this was going to happen, they had to take a preemptive attempt.
Mm-hmm.
As Shahid Yahya Sinwar recently said, he said it before as well, but they were not going to remain silent when they're attacked. They had to do something.
Right.
And they had prepared the grounds for the attack on Gaza, to be honest. Because if you see the latest UN General Assembly debate that Netanyahu had presented, the agreement that they want, the normalization deal that they wanted to go with Saudi Arabia, that was the final stepstone. Mm-hmm. That was the final milestone that they wanted to meet to silence all the Arabs.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And now when the grounds are ready, when this deal was finished, they would have encroached and annexed Gaza.
So you mean before 7th of October, Israel's were really decisive in attacking the Gaza?
Of course.
Full-scale for conflict. That's
yes,
right.
They never mentioned in their state media, but meetings, their social media, their public opinion was that, look, Gaza is ours.
Right.
Remember, their expansionist state from river to the sea. Yes. They always wanted more.
The greater Israel.
Even the Sinai Desert, which is now under the Egyptian authority, even they want that. They wanted, of course, an expansionist state, if you look at the map, it's broad. So these are just steps they're taking, very cunning steps to annex it. Now, 7th of October was a very brave and a very strong deterrence against this expansionism.
Yes, that's right.
And this was like essentially a grave that Hamas dug for Israelis. Mm-hmm. And it's now ready. The Israelis, all their plans were now annihilated because it was very premature for them to now go and attack Gaza.
Thanks. And why Sheikh Rouhani has been changed from an attack into a genocide and a massacre now? I mean, this is a really big question, okay? The conflicts between the two, I mean, the occupier Israelis and the occupied Palestine, there's not to be such scale, full-scale conflict between the two, okay? But this time, this has been changed into a kind of, I don't know, maybe a genocide, we can call it, ethnic cleansing, some call it, a massacre. Why?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You see that if we go back to the history of Judaism, we see that in many centuries back, I want to mention this fact that historically talking, in different periods of the time, in different periods of the history, we see that the Jewish people or the Jews actually had lots of problems with different nations, with different people.
With themselves too.
With themselves as well. That's why the history of Judaism is always problematic. It is not only for nowadays that they have this problem with Palestinians or with Arabs. But in the history, if you go back to the history and you study the history of Judaism, you see that the problem were to the extent that sometimes some other kings, like Persia kings or sometimes the Eastern, Western kings, rescued them and saved them from the people, from the people who wanted to fight against them because of their ideas, their ideologies, their beliefs. And unfortunately, these kind of beliefs are still there. Some part of these people or groups of these people, they have these ideas that, okay, for example, all these Arab lands, I don't know, Muslims land, these different territories belong to us and we have to conquer and we have to get control of them. So this is...
They're looking for the greater map.
This is the idea that some of these extremist Jews, we can say they have. So this, it is the main cause of the problem, you know? Up to the time they do not change this mentality, this mindset, then of course, not only Arabs, wherever they are, whenever they are, they have problems, as they have in their history. And that is why I think when they, for example, kill the innocent of civilians, innocent civilians of Palestine or Lebanon or Syria, for example, it's not something new.